Okay, here we go. Are you all set? Are you sitting upright in your chair? Very nice. You've got your Subway sandwich as usual. Very good. You're all set on that side. I'm all set on my side. I like the way the needles are bopping. Keep them at that spot. And we'll be all set. I'll give you the three S's. I'll give you the countdown. You give me the music. I'll give you a podcast. That seems to be our modus operandi. Been working for 265 episodes. I don't see why it shouldn't work for this. All right. Are you set, my friend? Very good. Here we go. Three S's. Star. Smile. Strong. All right. Here we go. Three, two, one. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget, listening to this podcast is not your only responsibility. It's your job to get out there and tell the world about it as well. So send a link, send a message to your friends, your family, anyone that you know who listens to a podcast. Tell them that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion and that little extra effort is much appreciated, and who knows, you may even get a nice little sticky star. Also, if you like what you hear, whether you're a longtime listener or new to the podcast, if you'd like to hear more, don't forget, you can hear previous episodes by going to WGNRadio.com, go to the podcast section, click on the prompt for this podcast, and you will find, hopefully at least, I know I've done them, whether in that vault, I don't know, but I know there are previous podcasts in there. If there are all 100 or 265 back there, I don't know. But at the very least, you can go back there and hear what we've talked about in the past so you can be up to date with what we talk about in the future. As I get my podcast abacus out, if there are 265 episodes in the vault, then this must be episode 266. And I'm very happy to announce that for episode 266, I have a frequent and original contributor to the podcast, Mr. Mick Kaler, making another appearance after a long absence. Welcome, Mick.
Good to be with you, buddy.
And I thought it would be fun to talk about an interesting little story that once again appeared the last time you were on about a month or so ago.
Right.
Was about the Rolling Stone 500 greatest albums of all time.
Right, that they ranked, and we noticed that there was a cultural shift as to what was great and what wasn't so great.
Right, and so then, lo and behold, Rolling Stone just put out a list of the best 50 sitcoms of all time. They love their lists. Magazines love their lists.
Well, it gets people talking and
participating
and sharing their favorites and all that.
Well, look at what it's doing right here.
Yeah, here we go. We're biting into it. We're hooking in.
And the funny thing is that for years I've been complaining about how irrelevant and how Rolling Stone really at this point is just a mere figment of what it used to be, a mere shadow of its former self. And yet suddenly I find myself quoting Rolling Stone quite a bit now, so I don't know what they're doing. There's certainly, if you read the magazine, there, to your point, there's definitely a shift in terms of focus and who they're aiming it at.
Yeah, and their point of view, exactly.
Yeah, which makes sense, but at the same time, I could literally page through that thing in 5 minutes, but every so often they come up with a nice one.
Yeah, well, this sitcom list was interesting.
And what the reason I thought it would be interesting to talk to you about this is because when we talked about the 500 greatest albums, as you had mentioned, you know, the change in or the shift in kind of audience and perspective, there were a lot different albums that were on the list that used to be on the list that they've done in the past. In fact, the number one album they claim the number one album of all time is Marvin Gaye's What's Going On, which in the previous incarnations of that list of the greatest albums was always Sgt. Pepper.
Right.
Which showed up at like 24.
Kind of dropped a little bit, yeah.
But what I was so intrigued about, when I saw this headline, 50 best sitcoms of all time in Rolling Stone, before I even turned to the feature in the magazine, I was already thinking, oh, you know, it's going to be either some of these newer shows or some of the shows that were on perhaps in the like mid-90s because
or Will and Grace.
Yeah, like, because, yeah. You know, it's going to be more tailored to people now in their mid-20s or early 30s. And so certainly some of those vintage shows, because we're talking about all time. We're not talking about the last 30 years, the last 20 years. Right. We're talking all time. So we're talking about going back to the, you know, the 50s.
Sure.
I mean, that's 70 years worth of television.
And network TV offerings. And now we got the cable.
Yeah, right.
Streaming services. Too,
so
right.
I really assumed that, you know, the number one show is going to be Gossip Girls.
Or Younger.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, you know, so I was not, based on what was the other editorial stories of what they were telling me the best music was right now, of which I knew none of the artists and none of the songs, I could only imagine. And once again, not even maybe even more recent shows, but also, you know, in the last, you know, 15 or 20 years now, there's a heightened, excitement for shows like Full House.
Right.
Oh, which is like the worst show on television.
Modern Family.
Even Modern Family. I'm talking about going back, like, you know, or Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Sure.
You know, all those shows that used to be on, like, say, in the late 80s, early 90s on a Friday or Saturday night when, you know, 10 to 14 or 15-year-old kids didn't go out because they didn't have cars.
Mm-hmm.
So they stayed home and watched these really bad shows. But now they are the memories that 25 or 35-year-old kids have.
Right, that's what they embrace.
Yeah, because that's what they grow up on. We were out and about. So, I mean, did you ever watch Fresh Prince of Bel-Air?
No, I'd see the commercials every once in a while. But again, like you just said, I was usually out, and it just doesn't seem to be with something in my wheelhouse. So
yeah.
Nothing against Will Smith, because I've liked him in movies, but I just was like, no, that's not for me. I mean, even like shows like a Growing Pains, or like you said, a Full House, those were like, well, that's not really kind of what I'm into.
Or like Charles in Charge.
Yeah, exactly. Or Joni Loves Charge.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, so I was like, I looked in the table of contents, and I was on my way to page 46 where the feature was beginning. I was not really, I figured, oh, this is going to, I should really take another one of my blood pressure pills.
You're worried about the glaring omissions, right?
Yeah, because I could already see, you know, I mean, at the very least, I would say perhaps it would be Friends.
Yeah.
If there was going to be like a show that even was a little bit older, but at the same time, you know, is embraced by, you know, I don't even know what generation we're in now. Are we Generation Y, Z, right. Millennial? I don't know where we're at. But
it's funny you mentioned Friends, because when I saw the list and made my notes, it was 38.
Yeah. I mean, I was shocked. So
I was really surprised.
Yeah, so I get to the page and I turn to it, and lo and behold, it says, you know, on the first page, you know, the 50 best sitcoms of all time. And much to my surprise, and it was just the front page, they dedicated just this one page, the first page of the story, to the number one show, and it was The Simpsons.
Right.
Now, that is, to me, that was a shock in that, first of all, I don't know about you. Do you consider The Simpsons a sitcom?
Not really.
You know?
I guess
in theory, it's about a family. It's a situation comedy, but it's animated.
Right, and it's animated, and so there's that. I think the reason that The Simpsons got to number one was because of its longevity. Because, yeah, I'll be honest, the first six seasons of The Simpsons, I never missed an episode.
Oh, you couldn't.
Yeah,
and then I mean, it was that important in the pop culture world.
Yeah, and then after a while, it kind of faded out on me. But the show continues. They make news when they bring in special guests, whether it's a music star or an actor. It's almost, I thought about Friends. It kind of reminds me of, remember when there would be guest stars on Batman that weren't guest villains?
Right, right. Yeah. Up, like they would pop out of the window.
The rope. Yeah. You know, it's like, oh, I want to be on that show. I want to do this.
Hello, citizen.
Yeah, exactly. and I think sometimes The Simpsons has gotten to that point, but look at that longevity. It started in 1989. It's still around today. So it's like, well, there's been more than one generation that's grown up with The Simpsons.
Now,
so,
do you watch it now?
Not anymore, no.
No, I have. I can't even remember. Now, to your point, I literally remember watching the first episode of The Simpsons, which was kind of that Christmas episode with the dog.
Right, with Santa's little helper. Yeah.
And I do remember, because I did enjoy watching the Tracy Ullman show. And if you remember,
that's where the cartoon feature started.
Yeah, that was, the Tracy Ullman show was a half-hour television show. And The Simpsons actually originated as little, what, maybe 1 or 2 minutes at the most.
Yeah, just little vignettes.
Little bumpers in and out of commercials and things. Right. But it turned out that, you know, Fox at that point was a fledgling network, and they were willing to look for any kind of, you know, original programming. And certainly there were some pretty big names behind that. James L. Brooks, who had made a career earlier in television with the Mary Tyler Moore Show,
and movies,
Terms of Endearment, right. And then as well as people like Sam Simon, who was involved in Taxi. So it certainly had a pretty good pedigree, and to have expanded it from, you know, these 1 or 2 minute little bites to even a half hour was a pretty bold kind of move for them to say okay. And if you, I mean, think about how controversial the Simpsons show was in the late 80s and early 90s. If you remember, schools banned kids from wearing Bart Simpson t-shirts.
Right. And there was even the first George Bush said that I want families to be more like the Waltons and not the Simpsons.
Yeah. I mean,
there was that whole controversy.
There was such a cultural, such a different mindset at the time. I mean, now, the Simpsons is tame.
Yeah. I mean, you think what followed after it, like whether it's Itchy and, I mean, Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah. Or Itchy and Scratchy. Or no, I mean, no. What's the other? What are those other?
South Park.
Yeah, South Park. Or what were the other ones? Ren and Stimpy.
Right. Yeah, Ren and Stimpy. All those kinds of shows. You know, it's like, you're right. The factor has certainly been goosed up quite a bit. But like I said back then, yeah, I remember. Yeah, the Bart Simpson thing. In fact, a friend of mine, his sister-in-law was a teacher at the time. And I do my Homer Simpson voice every once in a while for it. It would just drive her nuts. He said, I can't stand that show, you know, because she knew what influence it had on the kids, you know. So
and now
it was back in the day, in the early 90s especially.
I mean, now Bart Simpson, he doesn't even conjure up anything.
No, nothing as far as rebellion or, like you said, controversy of any kind. But, like I said, I just think the longevity thing and being around and, I think that really had the reason for it to be number one on the list for the sitcoms.
Well, too, I think what you also have to look at with The Simpsons, and it probably, to your point about the longevity, it really, I think if you were to go back and watch the show from its beginnings, and like I said, I haven't watched it in probably more than 10 or 15 years, to be honest. I mean, it's been on for 32 years now. It's crazy.
Right.
But at the same time, I think that that the show really, what is perhaps its greatest asset is it was a it and continues to be, from what I understand, because every so often you hear about an episode that did this or did that. It really is a time capsule because of the references it makes to the current, whatever's current.
Right, and social commentary.
Yeah, as well as making, to your point, social commentary and observations and things about the our times today and our times tomorrow. There's no question that the writing on the show has always been top notch.
Yeah, very clever.
And but as I said, I guess in my mind, because it's animated, I never would have thought. I think of it as I put it in another category, like an animated, as opposed to a sitcom. But I guess, it has every attribute of a sitcom.
Well, you talk about cartoons. You think of Flintstones, Jetsons,
right? But exactly.
Stuff like that.
South Park. I put those all in.
Right.
A different, but I guess in this list, they certainly do not make that differentiation.
No, they embrace it as a sitcom. So that was interesting. Yeah.
So, once again, having been, I don't watch The Simpsons now, but I certainly was. I mean, I still have on my Christmas tree, I have a Homer Simpson doll that I put in a Santa coat.
Okay.
I still have some remnants of my Simpson. I wasn't a Simpson crazy head.
Right.
But I certainly embraced The Simpsons when it was a new show and really was cutting edge and really was, but here was the thing that really blew my mind. So now I turn the page, which is fun to do in a magazine. You can't do that online.
That's right. Got texture here.
I mean, scrolling is fine, but there's still something cool about turning a page. And I was shocked when I started, because then I in my mind I'm like, okay, Simpsons are okay, number one. Okay, I'll go with you there, but still I'm thinking Gossip Girls is number two then. And I look at page 47 and I start to see this list of the photos of this, and I see number two is Cheers. And number three is Seinfeld. And number four is I Love Lucy from 1951.
Right, they went real retro there.
Yeah, and then All in the Family is number five. Number six is MASH. A 70s and 80s show. All in the Family, another 70s show. Cheers, an 80s show. Mary Tyler Moore, number seven, a 70s show. Number eight, one of my favorites and our favorites. I mean, that's how we met, basically, because of our shared love of The Honeymooners. 1955.
Right. Yeah.
The Honeymooners. Well, that's think about how crazy that is to be in the top 10 in today's world in this magazine,
right,
which is aimed at a whole new generation, a politically correct generation, a cancel culture kind of generation. I mean, every episode, Ralph Cramden threatens to punch his wife.
Exactly. But the other thing about The Honeymooners and friends, fellow friends who, love the show too, they all agree, though, there's a universality. There's always the conflict between, Ralph and money, Ralph and his wife, Ralph and Norton and their friendship. There are things there that, despite the years that have gone by, it's like we still have those struggles ourselves, and we can identify them, whether we agree with Ralph, threatening to send Alice to the moon with Bang Zoom or whatever, So
and just like Archie Bunker in All in the, because once again, I mean, you cannot deny the influence that All in the Family and the transitional effect that All in the Family had on, once again, on not only television, network television, but on the culture, where it was actually after 15 years or so, or say 20 years, if you're going to go back to 50, that show premiered in 1971. If you look at, it was always this kind of idealized, most sitcoms presented this idealized view of the family, view of everyday life. Yeah. You never, on Leave It to Beaver, you didn't talk about abortion. Mm-hmm. You didn't talk about rape. You didn't talk about unemployment. We never knew what Ward Cleaver did for a living, but he always had a job.
Yeah, and he always came home dressed nice.
Yeah,
and there were no issues about race.
Yeah,
religion. Like you said, the sex thing, the religion thing. And again, you can look back at that and see, wow, look what was going on then. Whether it was Nixon in the White House, where Archie Bunker, supported him so much.
Vietnam,
and Vietnam, exactly. So again, there are things that are kind of dated there, but they're the kind of things that we can look at today and say, well, people are still arguing about politics. Yeah,
the sad part is, if you watch reruns of All in the Family from 1971, right, 50 years ago, sadly, the same problems and the same issues that they are talking about then, we are still struggling with race and prejudice and abortion and equal rights and women's rights. I mean, it's really, we may sit here in 2021 and think we've come a long way. And then when you watch that show,
there's been no progression.
There's been very little progression. I mean, there has been a little progression because, I don't know if Archie would have ever voted for Barack Obama. But
he would have been a Trump man for sure.
Yeah, no kidding.
Or a Bush man for
but
sure.
My point in with the Honeymooners is the same way to your point, that even though Ralph was very boisterous and very pigheaded and very, verbally, he never did hit Alice. Let's put that on the record. He never did hit her. He was certainly verbally abusive, I guess, in today's standards. Mm-hmm. But once again, that was very reflective of the times in the 50s. Mm-hmm. That wasn't that, this whole idea of the man being king of the castle and yelling at his wife, that was the reason why people laughed at it was because they saw themselves in it. It was exaggerated for a comic effect, but it wasn't too out of the realm of reality.
Right. Well, the other part too is if a person, say 30 years younger than us, which is look at the Honeymooners now, they see the universal conflicts, but they'd also be going, why doesn't Alice have a job? They don't have a kid. That apartment takes about 10 minutes to clean. Right. She's got to cook a
big because she would never, he would never allow her to work.
That's right. Except when she was at Krausmeyer's Bakery.
My career is stuffing jelly into donuts.
Yeah. So, but yeah, like I said, the list is interesting. I wanted to get to
Seinfeld. I just wanted to finish one quick. But the thing is that just like All in the Family, and just even though Archie Bunker was bigoted and narrow-minded, and just like Ralph was a loudmouth and, like I said, maybe verbally abusive, if you watch the show, the fact of the matter is that the show always makes them look like they're wrong. They always get their comeuppance. They are not being celebrated.
Right.
And that's the thing that's important, so that you don't just, younger people might look at the show and say, oh my God, this is disgusting, and I can't watch it because look how verbally abusive this person is. Look how prejudiced this character is of Archie Bunker. But what you have to take the show, then you have to watch all 27 minutes of it to see that at the end of the show, Archie isn't right.
Right.
And he may not learn his lesson, but we are seeing how bad his behavior is. With Ralph, he will see, and he will always end the show, as much as he yells at Alice, for 20 minutes, most of the episodes end with, baby, you're the greatest.
Yeah, he comes around, he sees the light. So there's, I guess you'd say, like an ending or a moral. And it's funny you mentioned those things, because I wanted to talk about Seinfeld. Seinfeld was number 3 on the list. And,
I expected it to be number 1. I mean, or at least certain, I thought it would be higher than 3, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I could see that too. But a couple of years ago, there was that conflict of, they took a handicapped person's parking space. Or Jerry and George tried to get Jerry's girlfriend drunk. So
that show is very politically incorrect.
Well, the thing is, and this is years ago when I saw Seinfeld in concert. I think it was after the show had been on for a couple of years. And he took some questions from the audience at the end of the show, at the end of the concert. And one of them was because George was out of work. And somebody asked, is George going to get a new job? And Jerry looked at the guy and said, why would you hire him? And then he brought up, and you look at all the episodes, same thing. These are four self-absorbed people, and more often than not, they're not the winners at the
end. Exactly. You know,
they get their comeuppance.
And that's what I think is so important, because it's easy to have a knee-jerk reaction
to something they see.
And just see the initial, and to see the characters and hear what they say and say, oh, this is terrible, this is terrible. It's like, no, okay, but now wait to see what happens. These people do exist in real life, but these people are not being celebrated necessarily. They're not being brought up as any kind of role models.
Right.
They are being shown that that George ultimately, I mean, let's face it, in the finale of Seinfeld, whether you liked it or not, they end up in jail.
Yeah, for a year. They're going to do a year in the place.
Because of their self-absorption.
Yeah.
They are literally jailed because they are so self-absorbed that they don't even help somebody.
Right. And the other thing I wanted to mention about Seinfeld, and this is a while ago, I saw Seinfeld being interviewed where he talked about the four levels of comedy. He says you can make your friends laugh. If you can make strangers laugh, that's level number two. Number three is if you can make strangers laugh and make money. The fourth level is if people imitate you as you're being funny. Look at Seinfeld. I can't even list all the cultural references.
Unbelievable.
That show brought up that we have to this day, whether it's regifting or shrinkage.
Or yada, yada, yada.
Or Spongeworthy or whatever. Those things are around to this day. That's why I think another reason why that show was so high on the list. It's like, wow, people are still talking about this stuff. And again, that show came out in 89, you know, originally. And even though it ended in, what was it, 98. Yeah, '98.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you know, that's 24 years ago now, or 23 years ago.
Think about that. It's been off.
Yeah.
It's been off for 23 years.
Right.
Not
and the last thing I wanted to point out about Seinfeld that I really admire, Jerry knew when to stop the show.
Oh yeah, I mean they offered him. I don't know if it was
like crazy.
I don't know if it may have been literally. This is not even an exaggeration. Somewhere between $30 and $50 million to do one, because that, you know, at that point they used to do 20 some episodes. It was almost $2.5 or $3 million an episode. That's unheard of.
Well, he was one of those who recognized, you know, you always want to leave it before you're like, is this still on? You know, because like you mentioned before in the episodes or the list of shows, okay, MASH, okay, MASH, MASH was on fumes for years.
Oh, God, MASH, you know, the funny thing about MASH was when MASH first started in the early 70s, I was a big, I mean, MASH was another show that really was very different from anything that was on television at the time.
Sure.
And even as a young kid, I was a big fan of MASH. I mean, I don't even know if I got all the references because I was so young.
Right.
But there was still this, you know, between Alan Alda, there was great chemistry in the cast, and you know, they made fun of of Frank Burns. I mean, it was still some, even if you didn't get the warlike or the, even the 50s kind of references, there was still enough there that you could get it, you know. But I remember, I must have been in like fourth or fifth grade, and there was a TV column in the Sun-Times. And the guy's name was Bill Granger, who I just believe passed away a couple of years ago, actually.
I remember him, yeah.
Yeah, and so he had this column, and I've been reading the newspaper since I was in third or fourth grade. I love the newspaper, although not anymore, because there's really not many newspapers around. But anyway, he wrote this column, and he said he wanted kids to write reviews of their shows. You know, I'm sitting here writing reviews of these shows. Mm-hmm. I would like to hear what kids think about, you know, what's their favorite show, whatever.
Right.
So once again, I wanted to get involved in the media from when I was a little kid. So I was in about fourth or fifth grade, and I wrote into this thing, and I wrote about MASH.
Okay.
Now here was my, tell you how this is how wrong I was. My prediction, right? Because MASH When did McClane Steve? Was the show only on for like one or two seasons before he left?
Right, when he took off, and then eventually, Harry Morgan.
Right, but my point is, he was only on for two or three years, if that.
Right, right.
So I write because now he had just left.
Okay.
And I was not a fan of Mr. Potter or
Colonel Potter.
I didn't think he fit on there at all. But he wasn't really on right away either. Remember Frank Burns was kind of the
transition to it.
Yeah. But anyway, so McClane Stevenson had just left, and so here's me. So here's now once again, I am not without opinion. Even when I was 11,
sure.
Stevenson
leaves, and you write.
Yeah. So I say the popular show MASH has lost its popularity. McClane Stevenson left, and so did the humor of the show.
It lasted until 1983, Bill.
Yeah, it lasted about 10 years later. It's only a cultural icon.
Right, biggest farewell episode, one of the biggest ever watched.
Yeah.
Still. Yeah.
Yeah, oops. But he did print it. He did print it.
Right. Well, the reason I mentioned MASH, because like I said, I'll tell you the year they should have ended that show. The season where it started when Radar left.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because everybody started leaving.
Right. So he leaves, and it was that year that all of a sudden MASH became a democracy.
Oh,
where every character
right.
had glib lines.
Yeah.
Margaret's makeup is nice.
Oh my, Margaret! Margaret looked like, I mean, hot lips. I mean, these. Let's remember, these people are supposed to be in, you know, the jungles of Korea.
Right, and she's all glam.
Yeah, I mean, she looks. Yeah, I mean, she looks. She's got makeup on. She's got a makeover. Where did she get all this makeup and her hair curled?
Right. Yeah. So anytime I see a MASH rerun, if it is after 1979. I'm like, well, I'm not going to watch it because it's a show that stuck around too long.
Way too long.
You know, and that's one of those that did that where it's like, again, like I said, go back to Seinfeld. He recognized, hey, you know, and to be honest, even with Seinfeld, even that last season, the only good episode was the Festivus episode.
Yeah, no kidding.
There really wasn't a lot of good. You know, they went from the muffin tops to the pudding skins.
Right.
It's like, guys, you're scraping the same
right.
stuff out of the pot.
Right.
And
yeah.
Like I said, I think Jerry recognized that. But like I said, MASH, I think it went on way too long. And like I said, after 79, it's like, that's just the end of it.
To your point, I don't even know if I lasted that long. I mean, I'll be honest with you. Even though I proclaimed to the entire city of Chicago that the popular show MASH is losing its popularity,
right?
And it certainly didn't. To your point, when I see the helicopter at the beginning and the music is playing, if I don't even see Wayne Rogers' name on there,
oh, so you're even more old school. Okay.
I was never a big BJ Honeycutt fan.
I liked him at the beginning until he kind of got like Hawkeye, where he had his little claws.
Yeah. Oh, he got so wimpy. Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Yeah, he got so wimpy. But when I see Wayne Rogers, when I don't see his name on there, and certainly, it's really funny that you mentioned that. When you watch the beginning of the show, when you see the credits, you know when it's going to be bad. If you see William Christopher's name, Father Mulcahy, on the credits at the beginning, you know it's horrible because...
As opposed to an also ran, added in at the end of the credits.
Because usually when the show was good, the credits would show Alan Alda, Wayne Rogers, Loretta Swit, Larry Linville, and McClane Stevenson, and then maybe, the original ones, maybe Gary Berghoff.
Right.
But it didn't go deep into Klinger... or Father Mulcahy,
right?
Or some of these other guys, they would be on at the end where they would say also star, you know,
extra features. And
the end of the show.
Yeah. So but that was a show that stuck around too long. And I want to mention another show, and it didn't make the list, which kind of surprised me, but it's another show, a more modern show that I think stuck around way too long, and that was Big Bang Theory.
I mean, not only, because that was one of the things I wanted to talk about, I just wanted to give you the top 10 before we start to talk about that. But yeah, so I tell you, so number 8 was The Honeymooners. Now here's the first. This is what shocked me. Like I said, I was very impressed with this top 10 because I was not seeing, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Right.
Or some of these shows, or a Will and Grace, or something in this top 10. I'm like, you know what? I could look at this top 9, because number 9 then is Parks and Recreation, which I think is a good show. I think number 9 is way too high for it.
Yeah, I put it in the 20s somewhere.
I do watch it, and I did enjoy it, but I think that's one of the shows that has gained a lot since it's been gone off the air. It's grown in legend because it's like this generation's Seinfeld,
right?
You know, if Seinfeld was of the 90s and the then this was kind of like the offshoot of that. Now what? And then number 10 was a big shocker to me. Once again, one of my favorite shows of all time. Number 10, The Larry Sanders Show with Gary Shandling. Yeah. So yeah. I was like, wow. When I looked at the top 10, I'm going Simpsons, Cheers, Seinfeld, All in the Family, MASH, Mary Tyler Moore, The Honeymooners, Parks and Recreation, and Larry Sanders. I say to myself, I got to tell you, out of those top 10, I've only got a problem with one of them, and I do watch that show. It's not like I go, oh, my God.
Yeah, well, it was funny because I was happy to see Larry Sanders in the top 10, too. The only thing is, when you talk about omissions, I think this is Gary Shandling's show, which was the best show of the 80s, belonged in that list, too. In fact, after Gary Shandling died, I remember Bill Maher that week did his show, and he said, here's a guy who had the best sitcom of the 80s with it's Gary Shandling's show. And he had the best one of the 90s with the Larry Sanders Show.
Yeah, and to your point then, talking about some shows, first of all, earlier in our conversation, you referenced Modern Family.
Yeah.
Modern Family not on this list.
Right.
Which was surprising in that, first of all, I would have to think that that has been one of the most popular shows of the 2000s.
Absolutely, yeah.
And
gathering one.
Yeah, and to me, I think it's still funny. I still watch those reruns. So that shocked me. And think about Modern Family. Once again, when you think about the way how fast, especially in the last 10 or 15 years, how our culture has changed.
And Modern Family is right in the wheelhouse of the blended families, the younger wife, all that stuff.
And that's what surprises me, is because when it debuted in the early, in the late 20-aughts, I think it was maybe 2008 or 2009, it was somewhat revolutionary to have a gay couple, as you said, blended family, divorced family,
wife,
the whole aging thing. Now, when you watch Modern Family, you don't even think it was controversial.
No, now you look at it and you say, it's when you watch the movie Network, if you watch it today, it's like, what was so controversial about those TV shows on that Howard Beale show?
Yeah.
Same thing with Modern Family. It's like, well, my neighbors are just like this. What's the big deal?
Now, I think that Modern Family, in terms of the hip factor, when it first came on, it was kind of this hip show. But I also think that as time went on, it lost its hip factor just because it did fall in front of people's minds. It did fall into kind of a formula,
right,
and a pattern. And it while initially it was kind of groundbreaking in what it portrayed, as time went on, it didn't really move much.
Right. It kind of, like you said, it was more predictable.
Yeah.
Kind of knew where things were going to go, because I watched that show quite often myself.
Yeah, and I still watch the rerun, so I was surprised at it. But to your point about Big Bang, I mean, first of all, whether you like the show or not, that show was number one for almost 10 years.
Yeah, they had a great run. Absolutely.
So for that not to have made this list, and especially when you look at, someone like Jim Parsons, who has a lot of credibility and respect. He does Broadway. He's, he's openly gay. He works for, gay causes. So he certainly has developed into this kind of, Hollywood you know, kind of someone who's respected.
Right.
And so I'm just surprised that a show that was on for that long, whether you liked it or not, whether it was cutting edge, you know, comedy or not, you cannot deny
the success.
The success. Now, to your point, I do believe that that was a show that went on way too long.
And again, what happens, and again, like I said, I mentioned it with MASH. I always say this, comedy is not a democracy, but you know what happened is because of that popularity, because they're always number one and everybody's making so much money, you know that some of these co-stars besides Johnny Galecki and Jim Parsons, the other like, well, why am I not getting more lines or why am I not more in this? And I think the writers knew, well, geez, we better come up with some stuff for these side characters. If you watch after the year that one of my favorite episodes was the one when Howard got married. I love that episode, you know, and that was a great season ender, by the way. After that year, after that season, if you watch that sitcom, almost every scene, you've got almost every character in the same room.
Yeah.
Getting in their lines.
Right.
It's like, no.
That, yeah.
Because as I always said with Big Bang Theory, the best couple was Penny and Parsons. And,
oh, right. Exactly. Well, yeah, and I think they realized that, too.
Yeah.
Later.
Yeah, it's like, in fact, I always said in real life, that would be the couple that would end up together.
Right.
Not, you know, yeah. Not him and Amy Farrah Fowler. But like I said, all of a sudden it became a democracy. And same thing you were talking about with MASH. When I'm watching Big Bang Theory, as soon as I see what year it is, well, oh, Howard's married now. Oh, I'm not interested. And I click off.
Yeah. Howard! So, Howard! So after seeing the top 10, and being shocked at how it was, in my mind, very representative of some of the best in television, and did not just try to cater to today's young crowd, but actually,
right,
in a way,
their trends and their tastes.
Yeah, I'm actually thinking that when they put this together, they may have been saying to people, "Hey, folks, you know, young people, use this list as something to do some homework on."
Right, and learn
to go discover these shows rather than just, you know, giving you what you want to read and what you want to expect to see, and just confirming and validating what you like. Yeah. They actually looked at I give them a lot of credit for actually, you know, putting so many shows that I guarantee you, people in their 20s and 30s don't even know exist.
Right.
Or if they do, they've certainly never watched more than one or two episodes. So then right after number 10, once again, we come in with Dick Van Dyke, another 60s show.
You know, Black and White TV.
Black and White TV. Curb Your Enthusiasm, which is one of my all-time favorites. You know, Frasier, you can't deny the success of Frasier. That's going to be – actually, they're rebooting that again. The whole cast is going to get back together. Mm-hmm. But once again, you know, Frasier went off 20 years ago. Was off the air in 2004. So that's almost 20 years ago that it's been off. You know, another 90s.
Come back and look at this. Exactly.
Yeah, you know, Andy Griffith again, another 60s show. Then we've got Arrested Development. I can't argue with any of these.
Yeah.
You know, we've got The Cosby Show at 16. We got 30 Rock at 18. Taxi, one of the great, I think, underappreciated comedies. It was on for quite a long time. But I really never, I didn't think it, I never thought it got its due. And here to be in number 17.
Good ensemble cast.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I mean, you know, and Reverend Jim alone, you know.
Yeah.
you know, Roseanne was very groundbreaking for its time. Then you start to get, you know, number. Now, what I really thought, because I remember walking around about 5 or 6 years ago, and suddenly I'm seeing kids. Young kids in their 20s with T-shirts that say Dunder Mifflin on them.
The Office, sure.
And so I'm like, okay, wait a minute. What? Where did this, you know, don't forget. Now, The Office went off in 2015.
Right.
So to me, in my mind, that's an old show too.
Yeah.
But suddenly I'm going, well, why are these kids in their 20s wearing Dunder Mifflin shirts? Mm-hmm. And then I soon after that, find out and read, The Office is now on Netflix.
Right, so that's another thing they can stream and get into.
Now, here's the thing. The Office has been in syndicated reruns while it was even still on. Mm-hmm. That show has not been off the air since it's been on the air, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah.
So you could have been watching reruns of The Office, not only when they were on, but old reruns while they were still showing first run episodes. But for the last 5 or 6 years, it's been on TBS. It's been on, you know, it's always been on. And yet it just goes to show you where the younger people are not watching their local, Channel 9 for the reruns. They're not watching
Netflix to watch.
Yeah, they're not watching TBS. So while those shows were on, they don't watch that. But once it got into Netflix, it became, and now it's, I mean, now, you know, I mean, Pam and Jim are like the, Sam and Diane of Cheers.
Right. Or the Ross and Rachel, you know?
Yeah. And so I thought for sure that the U.S. Office version might even be number one, because it is such a, that now the younger generation has you know, embraced that show. And once again, think about it. It started in the early 2000s. Those kids today who are in their 20s, they were 10.
Yeah.
So they weren't watching The Office.
No, but they picked up on it. Like you said, Netflix, you click into something, and you know how it is at Netflix. It's so easy to binge watch anything.
Yeah.
And just keep following episode after episode, so there's a benefit right there, you know?
So I don't want to go through all 50, but I would urge you people to go online and just look up Rolling Stone's 50 best sitcoms of all time and look over the list, because you'll be surprised. You know, like I said, there are some, like I said, that I was surprised to see. I'm not surprised, like, for instance, to see South Park. But I was really encouraged the fact that there were more older shows
that were in the sweet spot.
That were in the, not even the sweet spot, but in the upper echelon.
Sure.
Whereas, like, for instance, you would have thought, like, a show like Veep, which is a very good show, with, you know, with a female lead of Julia Louis-Dreyfus, you would think, given, once again, our cultural shift today, well, that show, and that show did win, you know, she won countless Emmys, that show won countless Emmys, but that still comes in at number 44.
You know, I thought about that too, and I looked at the list and I thought, you know what? Maybe some people right now are so sick of politics.
Yeah, right.
Even the mocking of it is like, okay, just put that to the side and maybe we'll get to it another time. You know, and getting back to the omissions, the one that I had issues with, well, first of all, double check the list. Happy Days didn't make the list.
I've got a list of omissions too, and Happy Days is on my list of omissions.
Yeah, and again, now here's another one.
I mean, with the Fonz.
Okay, again, maybe I'm just old school. As soon as they went to the live audience.
Oh, terrible.
Lost me.
Yeah.
Those first two or three seasons when they were on film.
Oh, right.
Great.
Yeah.
You know, and that, but the other one for me was Scrubs. Where was Scrubs?
See, now that was a show, because I know that you liked that show, and I thought you were going to mention that. I was shocked to see that, because Scrubs was certainly very popular while it was on, and then even in reruns.
Right.
And then it disappeared. And I really thought it was going to be one of those kind of cultural shows that wasn't always, you know, immensely popular, but had this kind of real loyal and regular viewers that with time it would raise its its personality. And I was shocked to see, because here's the point. Okay, where was Scrubs, which was a long, you know, very popular cult kind of thing as well.
From 2000 on, yeah.
Did well in the ratings. It's not on this list. However, and this is another part of this list, but we got a show like Community is on this list.
Yeah, I didn't understand
that. And Malcolm in the Middle is on this list. And It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is on this list. And and what else? You know, I was shocked to see, and there's some that you would expect. There's some, I mean, you know, Brooklyn Nine-Nine is on this list.
I tried to watch that show and I was like, okay, I'm missing this one.
Yeah.
It's not connecting with me.
So, you know, A Good Place is on this list. I know that's very popular these days, you know, Ted Danson and that whole thing. But, there were a lot of shows that I thought were kind, I mean, I was happy to see, to be honest with you, even though it came in at 49, I was impressed once again and happy to see Barney Miller.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Barney Miller, because If you ask any big city police officer which television show out of all of them, NYPD Blue and all the Law and Order, all those, you ask them what TV show best depicted what goes on in a police department, they will tell you it was the Barney Miller Show, even though it was a comedy.
Right.
They said, that's the one. I have one other question for you, and that is, was Sex and the City a comedy?
You know, I was just going to say that. That came in at 36. I don't, I would never, I'll be honest, I never really watched that show.
No, I didn't watch it much either. But
I mean, I watched it for the shoes. I watched it for the shoes.
Of course. You wanted to keep up on your Jimmy Choo.
Yeah, my Jimmy Choos and things. Yeah. Yeah. But I never really watched it. I tried. It was just a little too much for me.
But was it funny?
I don't. Yeah, I would never have classified that as a comedy, but I believe it was, when it was nominated for Emmys, I think it was in the comedy category.
Well, the only thing I could figure out about it was, you know, we talked about Friends before. Okay, the people who loved watching Friends, especially when it's, you know, when it was on, you know, regular before it went to reruns, you know, young people watched that and said, I want to be like that. I want to live in this condo. I want to live in this house. I want to have my pals with
right.
me. I think Sex and the City, and of course, mostly with women, it was obviously big because women were like, well, wait a minute, I want to be like Carrie Bradshaw. I want to be like Miranda. And I aspire to that. But like I said, I don't put it in a comedy.
And you can't,
it was, like you said, in the awards, but it's something that escaped.
No, I never viewed that. I would never have viewed that as a comedy. But I have to say, I believe to your point exactly that the obsession in the last 15 or 20 years, once again, with women and shoes,
right,
is definitely, and the whole idea of this walk-in closet with a wall of shoes.
Yeah, that half your apartment is dedicated.
Yeah, if you watch any, you know, HGTV now, every you know, house has to have a walk-in closet with, you know, with room for, you know, a thousand pairs of shoes. There is no question that was directly influenced by Sex and the City.
Absolutely. Well, what were some of the omissions that you were?
Yeah, so I'll tell you, with every list,
keep in mind, we're only talking about 50 shows.
Yeah.
If you would have done like the top 100, some of the stuff we're talking about would probably be in there. But what were some ones where you're like, wait a minute, where's this?
So every list is interesting to read what's on it, but then what's more interesting is in when you say what should have been on it.
What was missing? Right?
So I almost have 50 more. But here's some of my glaring omissions.
Okay.
My first glaring omission, because it's one of my favorite all-time shows, is The Odd Couple.
Oh yeah.
I mean, Tony Randall and Jack Klugman. It now, to your point, there, what's very interesting about some of these sitcoms, and in any show, but a lot of times sitcoms, and if you watch them for long enough in reruns and close enough, you see this. You really can see many times how shows evolve.
Yeah, and develop, and characters develop, and comedy does.
Yeah, and you could see how the writers and the producers and even the actors realize, okay, wait a minute. Like, for instance, the Dick Van Dyke Show. It's really hard, and that show almost was canceled after the first season.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard for me, and I love that show, and it's one of the all-time great shows. But the first couple of seasons are very hard for me to watch because basically you could see that the show was originally pitched as the home life of a comedy writer for a big show, which is basically...
Right, domestic issues, things like that.
Which is basically Carl Reiner's life, who created it. However, so it's a lot of Richie stuff and Laura being jealous and Laura, you know, and Laura and Millie and once again, and Rob and Laura, as you said, these domestic issues, which to me were kind of exaggerated and overblown. Some of them are very funny. I mean, the one where Laura, you know, opens up Rob's mail is a classic.
Oh yeah, with the giant raft.
With a giant raft. But all of a sudden, if you start to watch the show in its linear kind of presentation, you realize that by the third season, I think, certainly the fourth, but maybe the third, the emphasis is away from the home.
Right, and more in the office.
And it's more in the office with Buddy and Sally. And you know, the home life is there. But I tell you, if you want to talk about child abuse, Richie, I mean, I don't even know who watched this kid.
Well, he was abandoned.
I don't even know.
He gets in his hamburger and he goes to his room.
I never heard of a babysitter. Rob and Laura aren't gallivanting. They're in cabins.
They're in fancy bars and balls and shows.
Yeah, they're out.
Richie was the original latchkey kid.
Yeah, unbelievable. But they realize, same thing, the first couple of seasons of the Mary Tyler Moore show, the classic one from the 70s, impossible for me to watch. It's all about Mary has a date. Mary and Rhoda have a date. Then suddenly the show shifts and the show basically takes place in that newsroom.
Exactly. And that was the place where it was interesting.
And then
it was developed.
And it was Ted Baxter and it was Mr. Grant and it was Sue Ann Nivens and Murray. And the show opened almost after from 73 to 77, that show almost every episode, the first shot is of the newsroom. Interestingly enough, think about it. Mary Tyler Moore on both of those shows. I wonder if she said, you know what? We need to get into the, you know what? We have, you know, this is, we, there's how many,
forget
how many of these.
About my personal life. Yeah. How many bad dates can I go on?
Exactly. And so I find it interesting that she's the common thread in both of those shows. And so with The Odd Couple, it's the same thing. What's interesting is the first two seasons of The Odd Couple are filmed, like you were saying.
Right.
And it even uses the same set as the film almost.
Yeah, exactly. Same set up in the apartment.
The show itself is very much almost a rerun of the film. It feels like the movie, the characters, and then what, like you said, in this case, it's just the opposite of Happy Days, where Happy Days was better when it did not have a live audience.
Right.
And it was self-contained on film and was just filmed like a show. Yeah. That's when the Fonz was really cool, and that's when the show was very true to its 50s roots. When it got in front of a studio audience, they played to the audience.
And they played to the Fonz thing and all that.
And the show had nothing to do with the 50s. It didn't feel like the 50s anymore.
No, everybody had longer hair.
Yeah,
it lost all its authenticity.
Yeah, their whole concept. The irony is, in Odd Couple, the show got better when it got in front of a live audience.
Yeah, there was better reaction, and the characters worked better in front of a live audience. You're exactly
and
right.
They did exaggerate to great effect, I think, for the sake of entertainment. Sometimes, you know what, going over the top is fine. Mm-hmm. And what was good about that, when they got in the live audience, Felix's finickiness and Oscar's sloppiness were elevated.
Yeah, they were accentuated where it's like, wow. You know, now you're getting the reaction from an audience.
Yeah, two ridiculous extremes, but it was funny. It still was funny. But yeah, so The Odd Couple was mine. Now, right second, you know, once again, we're always tracking, Mick. Second on my list was Big Bang. I was surprised it wasn't on there. I'm not a great fan of it, but I was surprised it didn't make the list.
Yeah, like I said, just all that popularity. I mean, like I said, Friends, you knew had to be on the list because look at all those years of it being so
big. I was surprised Modern Family wasn't on.
Okay.
I was surprised. I was never a fan. I don't think I watched more than two episodes, to be honest with you. And one only because Elton John was on one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I was never a fan of Will and Grace.
Right. But that was another very popular show, especially in the 90s.
Very popular. They did a reboot of it. And once again, for its time, it was very groundbreaking of, you know, a gay guy living with a straight woman and then the other, you know, the other gay character. But I was never a huge fan of that. Another one, I had Scrubs on there. I had Happy Days. In my view, if you're going to put The Simpsons on there, how do you not put The Flintstones on there?
Well, it's funny when you were talking about the animated stuff before, when you mentioned Ren and Stimpy, and I was like, well, wait, there's The Flintstones.
Right.
There's The Jetsons, you know.
Yeah, I was surprised about that. Another one that I was always a favorite of mine and was groundbreaking for its time was Soap.
Oh, yeah.
I was surprised that maybe Soap wasn't on there. I'm a big fan of shows of the 50s. I loved Phil Silver's Sergeant Bilko.
Sure.
And
I
thought
that one very well.
I thought that would have been on there. I'm also a big fan of Jack Benny, so I thought that would have been on there. Now, Police Squad was not on there, right?
Mm-hmm. No.
Now, with Leslie Nielsen, that was kind of a takeoff, kind of on of Airplane.
Right, and that was the mock-up like the movies were.
Yeah,
right.
And I always thought that, you know, from a cutting-edge thing, I thought that one would have been cool. I did have Why It's Gary Shandling Show, to me, in many ways, is almost even better than the Larry Sanders Show.
Yeah, again, another groundbreaking show, something different. I think maybe that's the kind of show that belongs on, like you said, like a Netflix, because maybe people would appreciate it more after that. You know?
I was surprised that Get Smart wasn't on there.
There's one. And in fact, actually, I had that written down. I forgot to mention that one, but Get Smart was very, very good.
I'm surprised that if you're going to, once again, if you're going to go with The Simpsons, the irony was that Family Guy is not on this list.
Mm-hmm.
And yet Bob's Burgers is.
Well, and it's funny, too, because there are people who will poo-poo The Simpsons but love both those shows you just talked about.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
So that surprised me. Now we talked about the idea of was Sex in the City a comedy?
Right.
Here's one that I think would be viewed as a comedy, but I wouldn't view it like that, was Wonder Years.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, you know what? That was, but there was that heart to it. There was that learning to it. It was funny in a lot of spots, but I think it's kind of one of those, what do they call it sometimes? They call it a dramedy.
Yeah.
It's like drama and comedy. And
but I just think, once again, if you look at Wonder Years, because they're actually making a new version of that now with all African-Americans.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
That show was, I think it would still fall in the comedy. I still think it was considered a comedy,
mm-hmm.
You know, in terms of like at least the Emmy Awards. But think about the influence that show has had in terms of that whole kind of idea of narration.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Blackish
has that.
Right.
The Goldbergs.
Goldbergs has that. Again, looking back and remembering things. Right.
So I was surprised that wasn't on there. Now, well, once again, I would have to say of the two, I would pick this one. How could the Munsters not be on there? I mean, the to me, I will always say, and I say this half jokingly, but half not, Fred Gwynne playing that character of Herman Munster.
Right.
To have been playing that character in that makeup.
Yep, and the shoulder pads and the whole thing.
But to have, you know, so he's this big, you know, gruesome looking guy, and yet he gave that character a childlike portrayal that was so unique because, and that's another show. If you watch the early episodes of the Munsters, they play it completely different. And once again, there was clearly over the summer, when the writers got together, someone said, okay, wait a minute. And you can always tell. The first season, because that show was only on for two seasons.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. The first season, or into the first season, Herman was like Frankenstein.
Yeah, exactly.
He was dark. The makeup was even meaner looking.
Right.
And they played up that he was this mean, gruesome, not necessarily mean, but he was this scary monster.
Daunting, yeah, exactly.
And then there's something happened. I don't know what episode it is, but suddenly the makeup is a little softer on Herman, and suddenly he goes, oh,
he's right, or darn.
Yeah,
darn,
he's
darn,
joking darn. Around, and he gets childlike. And when he gets childlike, those episodes are amazing. And I have to say, He cuts through that makeup, which is, and so from an actor's standpoint, I have to say, that's an, you might say, oh, what are you talking about? No, that's an amazing acting job to be able to make that character.
Right, transcend that to like a different character.
Yeah, through that makeup.
Right.
You know, and so I mean, once again, it was only on for a couple of years, but I really do think that show, I don't believe it should have been in the top 10, but I think, more than It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which I've never...
Like I said, I think this list should have been 100, and there'd still be some that we'd say are omissions or what's this doing here, but I think a top 100 would have been better than a top 50, just because, again, you're talking about the expanse of years between the 1950s, 70 years of television, and again, a lot of the shows you brought up are legitimate. Odd Couple, there's one I should have thought of. It's like, my God, are you kidding? I watched that show all the time.
Yeah.
Every Friday night I was tuned into that.
And think about this. The other one, too, it's in the same vein. it was a little more hit and miss, but still iconic in its characters, the Addams Family.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Now, here's one that...
You spoke French.
Now, one that surprised me, the original Bob Newhart is on this list.
But not the one after that.
But not the 80s version, which right. I thought for its time, mm-hmm. and that's another show, once again, it's impossible to watch the first two seasons.
Right.
And then, because they're playing it straight.
Yeah.
You know, even though the Bob Newhart character is kind of this fish out of water, in a writer's meeting, they said, wait a minute, and suddenly Bob was the only normal person in this crazy town filled with a bunch of eccentrics. And so you had Daryl, and Daryl. And right. you had they elevated the goofiness of all the characters around him, and they had a good
ensemble cast.
And he
too.
Played it straight and looked, you know, did his stuttering and looked like, what are you talking about? And they were so outrageous. And think about it, for I would think it makes this list for the last episode alone.
Yeah. When he goes back and ends up with Emily, yeah.
Because basically that episode, the final episode of the Newhart show, not the Bob Newhart show, but Newhart right. in the 80s, is pretty much universally accepted as that is the greatest final episode.
Yeah, this best series finale
ever, of any sitcom. And so I thought right. even for that reason alone, even though I thought it was a good show, when they decided to shift it. And so there's so many shows that even Everybody Loves Raymond.
Mm-hmm. Which that was kind of low on the list. It was 35th,
yeah.
I think it was 35th on the list. Yeah.
On the list, but once again, for me, when I'm on my program guide, I will not watch any Raymond episode if it says like the little description
mm-hmm.
before 2000.
Okay, yeah, I can see that too. In fact, it's funny you mention that because there's another show. It was about the family, like, you know, his little kids and him.
Right.
But putting in that involvement of the, you know, with Robert and his parents, it was much better as time went on.
They okay? became, and those kids, the thing is, you could see the way the show was pitched. Mm-hmm. And because it, once again, it was based on his humor as well. It even says based on the comedy of
right the domestic life, yeah. all that kind of stuff.
And it was like, oh, this guy with three kids and twins and blah blah blah. And the first year or so, it's all about their domestic life, and who cares?
Right.
The key was get the mother and the father, get Doris Roberts and Peter Boyle in here.
And get Robert in there.
And Robert. And then, and when you watch the shows from 2000 through when it ended in 2003 or 2004, whatever it was, or maybe later, those kids are as off screen as yep. Richie Petrie is.
They were always going over to the Parkers.
Yeah,
house,
yeah, you know? Yeah.
So Ray and Deborah could have sex.
You right? didn't even see those kids anymore. They were, and that's when the show got good. And once again, there was clearly a shift in focus, and they went, wait a minute, this is not the show. That's the right. show. The Newsroom on Mary Tyler Moore, that's the show. The Writer's Room on Dick Van Dyke, that's the show. Mom and Dad Coming Over, that's yeah. the show.
Well, it's funny. As long as we're on Everybody Loves Raymond, I wanted to bring up one other point, and this is the one thing I really admired about Ray Romano was he was so generous. I mean, obviously, he could whatever he says goes as far as the sitcom goes and what goes on it, even though they had writers. The episode when Frank and Marie bring back the toaster, the Christmas toaster.
Yeah.
If you watch that episode, the last 5 or 6 minutes of that show – Ray's not in it.
Yeah.
Deborah's not in it.
It's just them.
Robert's not. It's those two. And again, going back to what you were just saying, there is the humor. There's even the conflicts between Frank and Marie Barone. It's like, how generous are you that you let – you're not even on screen. You're just letting funny be funny.
Well,
if I ever met Ray Romano, I would tell him, boy, just that episode alone showed me you knew what worked and what should be on a show, what shouldn't be.
Well, and this is a perfect example, and I try to tell this to people, you know, when you're watching these kind of shows and in other situations. Ray Romano did it. Jerry Seinfeld did it, just like I said. Bob mm-hmm. Newhart did it. Toward the end of the show, the reason why the Andy Griffith Show got good was because if you watch, once again, the beginnings of the early, I mean, they're still funny, but when they realize that Andy is not the focal point.
Right.
Andy is the reactor to Barney and Otis.
And Barney's the one you're just going to get the laughs.
Yeah, but and as you, and even then, and when you watch later on, Andy becomes the only sane person in Mayberry. Right. And now exactly. We've got Barney and Otis and Ernest T and yeah. Aunt B.
And the fun girls.
Yeah, and then later on, we've got Goober and Gomer. You know, all those people. And Andy sits back and just reacts. And the same thing happened Jerry Seinfeld. If you watch the early Seinfeld episodes, some of them are very hard to watch.
Right.
Because they're about Jerry. And then the click comes on. Wait a minute. It's Kramer. It's how it's George. It's Elaine. It's the chemistry between all four of them. The shows don't have to revolve around Jerry. And once again, toward the end of that show, Jerry basic, to your point about, you know, how many times, there's some episodes where Jerry's hardly in it. Or if he is, he's got one or two lines. It's George and Kramer and Newman.
Right.
And that's the brilliance. The brilliance of that is with Seinfeld and Romano and Newhart, they realized, I don't have to be in every scene.
Right.
I don't have to be the focus. But you know what? Same thing with Andy Griffith. But you know what? My name's on it.
Yep.
And so you know what?
When people laugh, they say he's so funny.
And did you see Seinfeld? Did you see Raymond? Did you see Newhart? Did you see Andy Griffith? You know what? At the end of the day, who is getting the money?
Exactly.
Jerry Seinfeld, not George Costanza, not Kramer.
And what name's listed in the top three, it's Seinfeld.
Right.
The Seinfeld Show.
So Jerry Seinfeld was smart enough to say, you know what? I don't have to. I can let, and you talked about generosity. You talked about realizing who's funny and how, you know, the goal is, I think in all those situations, those people were smart enough to say, what makes this show better?
Yep.
As opposed to what makes me look better.
Exactly. It's funny. I mean, you mentioned Seinfeld. I remember he talked about when Michael Richards did his audition for Kramer, and he read his part in front of them, you know, they were before they cast the show. And when he was done, for some reason, Michael Richards did a handstand. And then he got up and he walked away. And Jerry turned to his fellow producers and he's like, well, if you want funny, that's funny. Right. Again, you recognize, you know, such like players on a team. You know, one guy can't always throw the football or run the football or hit the home run. You've got other people that need to make this up. And again, like you said, the Newhart and these guys, they were smart to say, hey, someone else can carry the ball, and I'm going to be the beneficiary of it.
And it's the same way with the Johnny Carson show. Johnny sat there and let his guests, whether it was Rodney Dangerfield or whoever it was, he let them be funny. But the next day you said, did you watch Johnny Carson?
Exactly. Did you see so-and-so on Carson? It was always that. And again, Letterman was very good with that too. Where like, hey, I don't have to be, you know, I'm the one that says, hey, here's the star. Here's your spotlight. Go.
It's your show. No, you just realize your name is on it.
Yeah.
So you're going to reap the benefits. And the people that are smart enough who can put their ego aside and recognize that those other people on that show are reflections of that star because
they make you look good.
They make you look good, but they're also a reflection of you to say, hey, I put this person on that show.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, once again, and at the end of the day, it's Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld who are getting $100 million checks when those shows are put on live, you know, on streaming services or on syndication. It's not Michael Richards.
Right.
So you know what? At the end of the day, who benefited?
Exactly. It's like, hey, I turned it over to you guys. You made me that much more money. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much. But, yeah, no, I have to say, so I was very – now, were there any other shows that you had listed that you maybe thought should have been?
When you were talking about, when you were talking about Wonder Years, one that jumped up on me that I really enjoyed, I liked Everybody Hates Chris, the Chris Rock show.
You know what? I tried that one, and I saw it for about a season or so, and then I mean, that it was very Wonder Years-ish.
Right, and I think it was a little funnier than the Wonder Years, but it was it kind of reminded me of the same thing. I was a little surprised that that one wasn't on there. Other than that, the other omissions I think you covered, like I said, that Odd Couple one, I should have thought of that. Seriously, every Friday night, I was watching that show.
No, that was the first one that jumped out at me. I mean, I have that on DVD. What I really did is I went back to whatever, because I did a purging a few years ago of just a lot of DVDs.
Right.
I mean, where could you even play them anymore? But I went to the DVDs that I kept. And
these are the keepers. These are the ones that.
And when I looked, and the DVDs that I kept were Curb Your Enthusiasm, The Odd Couple, It's Gary Shandling Show, and Larry Sanders. So I'm like, okay, those are the ones that are a top of mind that I know I like those shows.
Right.
You know, and another thing that I was glad it was on there, which is really one of my favorite shows. I actually like it's a different show, but I really like the English original version of The Office with Ricky Gervais. And right. That's another thing. When you watch The Office, the US version, the first six episodes are kind of hard to watch. Because what they basically did initially was take the original scripts from some episodes of the original Office in England, and basically just with this new cast redid them.
Right.
And while Steve Carell is a great comic actor, he's not Ricky Gervais. They're not the same. They don't have the same. They're just not the same actor or comedian at all.
Right.
And that show got good when they came back after those initial episodes and said, wait a minute, Michael Scott can be like David Brent in some ways, in overdoing it, in being inappropriate, but in a different way.
Right.
As opposed to imitating David Brent. He could be as inappropriate. He can be as stupid. He could be as pompous, but
clueless.
But in a different way that allows Steve Carell to play to his strengths. And when Michael Scott became Michael Scott as opposed to Michael Scott / David Brent, then that's when the show took off. And there I was surprised, even though they're both on there. I thought that those would be a little higher, especially given how, as I said, that in the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, there's so much popularity.
Yeah, the Office now, like I said, I mean, my God, I mean, everybody, as much as I guarantee you that, because they were talking about even doing a reunion of that, you know, I wouldn't be surprised in about 2 or 3 years if they do a similar kind of reunion like they just did with Cheers, where they brought with Friends, where they brought everybody back. Now I tell you, we can almost wrap this up, but I want to say, were you surprised that Cheers was number two?
Yeah.
Here's the one thing. Do you remember, Mick? We watched the final episode of Cheers together.
Yeah, I remember that.
You came to my house.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, there's no question from the first. I mean, I don't remember if you ever saw Cheers' first episode.
Sure.
When it really debuted, when it was on for the first time.
Yeah, I watched it. Yeah,
I watched it, and that show, that episode, for its time. To be honest with you, I don't even know if it would still hold up. I haven't seen it in many years, but all I remember when that show was on, it seemed like it was a half hour of constant laughs.
Right.
And I went, wow.
Yeah, good ensemble cast again.
Yeah.
All these supporting players.
And that show, there's a show that we talked about, you know, The Light Going On. I'll tell you, they knew it from the beginning.
Yeah, they had it from the beginning. The thing I'd say as far as it being number two, again, I think it probably looks the same way that you look at The Simpsons. There's this longevity. Okay, look at how many years this was like the top show. And, you know, it survived when Diane left, you know, and Shelley Long left,
right.
You know,
yeah.
And Coach wasn't there. And there was a lot of durability there. And yet, again, still funny, still entertaining. So I think that might be why it ended up at number two like that.
And I also think that it's number two because, once again, this generation, and more power to him, loves Ted Danson.
Sure. Well, yeah. He's been on so many other shows
yeah.
that he's had since, even though he's had great success with Cheers, you know, with Becker and all these other shows.
But this Good Place, you know, this Good Place really struck a chord with a lot of people. I watched the first couple episodes. I wasn't all that crazy about it. And then they did this major twist. I never really saw that, where it turned out that it wasn't heaven. It was actually hell.
I haven't seen that show yet.
Yeah.
So I don't know that.
But it's very, you know, so I think that Ted Danson in that show also played a role, because Ted Danson is like now, you know, the cool old guy.
Right.
You know, I mean, he just was on that other show, which I don't know if you saw it, you know, a Tina Fey production called Mr. Mayor.
Yeah.
And it was all right. It wasn't great.
No, it's kind of a poor man's Veep.
Yeah, really, yeah. But I have to say, I was very for someone who has been trashing Rolling Stone for a long time over the last several years, yeah. I was very impressed with this list, because it did, as we said at the top, it did at least acknowledge some of the older shows. If you're going to talk about all time,
the real old school stuff.
Yeah, I mean, when you've got a list in the top 10 in 2021, where we basically this generation, if something is 2 years old, they forget about it.
Right, it's old school, right.
And so for a top 10 to have a show that the number one show that first premiered in 1989, to have the second show that premiered in the 80s, to have the third show that premiered basically, if you think about it, in the late 80s, 1989 yeah. is when Seinfeld started.
Yeah, exactly, the pilot, right.
The fourth show from the 50s, the fifth show from the 70s, the sixth show from the 70s, the seventh show from the 70s, the eighth show from the 50s, and the tenth show from the 90s, and only one show from the 2000s. That's impressive, because they could easily have, you know, just stacked this with shows,
the modern day stuff,
more recent, that would have really...
I think they gave a very fair helping with that. I really think I agree with that.
Yeah. So all I can tell you, Mick, is the takeaway from this is go online somewhere and watch The Odd Couple.
There you go. Or watch IFC, because they run Scrubs reruns. I actually recorded some today.
Oh, there you go.
Some of the early ones. Oh, yeah. Scrubs is on Wednesdays. They do like five or six episodes in a row, run them in sequence. Check that out.
Yeah. I mean, Zach Braff, right? I mean, that's where we know Zach Braff from, right?
Exactly. That's where he started. Yeah.
Yeah.
So things to watch, things to check out.
Yeah. So anyway, the issue came out a couple of months ago, so you might not be able to find that on the newsstands, but
probably able to go online. Yeah.
The list of Rolling Stone's top 50 best sitcoms of all time is certainly available online. Check it out. And here's, I'll leave you with this: is don't just read the list, but live the list.
Good point. Yeah, experience these shows and see what you think.
Most of these shows are available with all the streaming services out there today. Yep. You can find all of these shows.
Peacock, Hulu, yeah. Netflix. Yeah.
You can find these shows somewhere. And if you haven't heard of any or a lot of these shows in the top 10, then I would urge you, extreme urge you. I don't even know what the word would be. I implore you. There's the word.
There you go.
Implore you to check it out. And at the end of the day, we'll leave you with this. Mick, give us a little Homer.
Well, I think you should watch all these shows, but Simpsons is number one because I'm very proud of it, okay? Don't!
don't have a cow, man.
I can't stand your boy. The boy drives me crazy.
Okay, there, eat it. See you later. See you later, meathead. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Don't forget, send a link, send a message. Tell your friends, tell your family, whoever listens to podcasts, tell them that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and your devotion is much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 266. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen.